now.
And now.
From Greater Santon and beyond. Get ready for the Santon Times Hour.
With your host,
Alexander.
Netsua, we've just fallen into the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and is always available on Apple, Google and Spotify if you listen to podcasts. I'm Alexander Leibner. This is edition 111, 111. It's week 17 of 2023 and it is almost over with April. Amperklar. Done. If you want to get in touch, you can email edit@santontimes.co.za or you can connect on social media at Santon Times or visit the website www.santontimes.co.za. And it's always good to hear from you, so please send through your questions, your comments, your feedback, your input, your thoughts, anything. Just put it on an email or on social media and send it through. As you listen from across Gauteng, South Africa and the rest of the world, so either on radio or as the podcast community, I'm happy to report that all is well in Santon land. And as many of the regular listeners know, I'm joined by my trusty left hand, Vincenzo, behind the control desk. Thanks so much for coming in again. If you're listening live on Mix 93.8 and not on the podcast, the WhatsApp line is open. So if you want to get in touch, 084-822-0938. 084-822-0938. And it's always good to hear from you during the hour. Earth Day this past weekend. If you celebrated Earth Day, that's what happened this past weekend. And I see a couple of things happening around Earth Day. National Geographic launched its new series, Secrets of the Elephants. And elephants, if you're a big elephant fan, I think they're the most incredible animals. And this series looks at the fascinating world of elephants. And it's on Disney Plus and DSTV. Either which way, pick your platform and give it a watch if you enjoy wildlife and elephants. And then also Miss Earth South Africa. Well, they celebrated 20 years of their leadership program. And I remember meeting Catherine Constantinides the year that she won Miss Earth internationally. And a year later, she set up Miss Earth South Africa, and here we are 20 years later celebrating this milestone. And as you know, Miss Earth, they plant a lot of trees as part of their program, as part of their reign. And she was at this, we had a little get-together at 54 on Bath to mark this occasion. She was saying that they planted some trees 20 years ago at a school in Soweto, and she had the chance to go back there again 20 years later. And it was school break. It was absolute chaos, as school breaks go. But there were school kids sitting under the tree, in the shade of the trees that they had planted when they were just little sprouts, little twigs in the ground. And now you've got these majestic trees standing there and another generation benefiting from that shade. And that is just incredible. I think there's a lot we can draw from that. But we're going to get Catherine on, Vincenzo. We need to get Catherine on and chat to her about Miss Earth. I know that that's also happening again this year. And about the 20 years. I think there's some incredible stories she has to share. Coming up on this week's show, after a horrendous fire ripped through one of South Africa's most notable university libraries, creatives and academics have come up with a sensational way to keep Africa's lost literature alive. It's amazing. Stay tuned. Then there's a new life insurance company in South Africa which has gamified group cover for companies in a very fresh way. I'll be chatting to the CEO and founder of that. Then after that, oh boy, one of the most successful rock and roll stories is back on stage in Johannesburg. And if the songs like Peggy Sue, Johnny Be Good and Rave On ring a bell, well, you want to stay listening. And finally, it has been quiet on the cryptocurrency front. And I chat to the country manager of one of the world's largest cryptocurrency exchanges for an update. What's going on there? Are you invested? Are you not invested? Well, we'll find out more. All of that coming up shortly. Should we do some headlines for this week, Vincenzo? Yeah? We got some? Great. But let's do that right after this.
Show some love.
Subscribe. Share.
Leave a review and rating for the Santon Times Hour
on your favorite podcast app now.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour.
This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with a brand new Jonas Blue release, finally taking us into the hour and your headlines for this week. Well, Liberty 2 Degrees, they plan to roll out solar installations at Santon City and Nelson Mandela Square, hoping to lower their dependency on Eskom's electricity supply, and we know how that's going at the moment. There are also further prospects of rolling out similar projects in and around Greater Sandton. So that sounds pretty exciting, and I suppose we're all looking at solar and batteries or something to curb the ongoing load shedding pain in one way or another. Then IOL reports CropLife South Africa has warned that the very wet and humid weather conditions over the summer months have brought about an outbreak of German cockroaches in the country. Sus. The group said cockroach numbers had increased recently, not only because of the weather, but also the unhygienic conditions that prevail in South Africa. There's a cockroach outbreak. I don't know what makes a German cockroach different to other cockroaches. I know that there's also Madagascan cockroaches. I've seen some of those. I think on Fear Factor. Interesting. So if you've seen a lot of cockroaches running around, do let me know. I'd be interested to know where they are. And then the Thabo Bester story continues. Surprise, surprise. This time on a few fronts. So there's a Sandton doctor who's now opened a case of forgery, fraud, and theft against the duo known as Dr. Nandipa and Thabo Bester after the two were found in possession of documents in Tanzania belonging to that Sandton doctor. It just never ends. And then also the Hyde Park mansion of the infamous duo that they occupied for a while. Well, that's up for rent again. If you're interested, it's going at 70,000 rand a month. I think the mansion's worth about 12 million, but you can rent that. And yeah, you know what? Should make for an interesting dinner party icebreaker if you decide to rent it. Let's leave it right there for this week. Talk about turning tragedy into triumph. I'll be finding out about a brilliant new project as I'm joined by University of Cape Town Libraries Executive Director Ujala Sadgur right after the break.
Follow the Sandton Times on social media.
At Sandton Times.
The best of Sandton and beyond.
You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour.
This is the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good podcast platforms wherever you are in the world. And as we get this hour going for this week, let me cast your mind back to April 2021. It's almost to the day. And you might remember this horrendous fire that ripped through the University of Cape Town and particularly the Jagger Library, which housed some, I don't even know how to describe it, pieces of African literature that are irreplaceable. I mean, there's not even a value that you can put to it. And 2 years later, we cast our vision back to Cape Town as the UCC has partnered with DSTV on a story that I thought was absolutely brilliant. It's called The Ashes Project, and it will retell some of the lost stories and write new ones that sort of almost rise from the ashes of this library. And what DSTV has done, they've collected 5 tons of ashes and remnants from the burnt stacks of African studies literature in that library. And working with specialists, they have been able to turn the ashes into a unique ink. And they're going to write new stories with this ashes ink. And they're going to be collaborating with some of Africa's finest storytellers to begin the journey of helping to rewrite this lost history, which I thought was an absolutely brilliant story. And to talk a little bit more about this, I've got from the University of Cape Town, the library's executive director, Ujala Sadgur. And Ujala, what was your reaction when you first heard of this idea that we were going to take the ashes and turn it into ink and rewrite new stories?
I must admit that when I first received the request, it was an email request from some of the representatives of DSTV and Ogilvy's. And, you know, it's in the midst of all the pressure and the tension and recovery, and it's just been 10 days after the fire and you're busy salvaging damaged materials. It's like, you know, when you have a gnat buzzing around your head and you want to brush it away and say, go away. When I first saw a request to collect ash and rubble, etc., and I said, you know, we're just recovering from a fire. I think this is one of the most ridiculous requests at this time. And to be very brutally honest, I brushed it off. immediately because that was not my priority at that time.
Yeah.
And so thankfully, the DSTV people who were continually emailing and saying they understand our constraints, etc. And I said, give us some time and we will then talk. And lo and behold, you know, after a while, I did delegate this particular responsibility to my project manager, who then helped them to collect this these 5 tons of ash and rubble. And eventually, you know, through an iterative process and an engaging process, we were able to find common ground. And the symbolic nature of the entire project is really, really precious. I think the idea of being able to create a whole new thinking around, or a whole new project around rebuilding, rewriting, and collecting anew was something that grew into something really fabulous. You know, having to hone down the ideas as to what we want and how would we depict this particular project came into being through this iterative process. So bearing in mind that we lost a significant percentage of our African studies collection, some of our eclectic collections within special collections, some of our manuscript collections were impacted. The idea of writing new stories, but also creating a piece of literary art from what has been salvaged and using this very unique ash ink to print this one of its kind books has evolved into something so mind-boggling that it's really been a journey of creativity, creative expression, but also two very distinct sectors getting to know each other, the advertising and the creatives and the librarians and the academic sector coming together to create a very beautiful piece of work. I must issue a disclaimer that the book that has been created is an aesthetic and a literary art piece. It's not for research or academic purposes, right? And so we need to see it as a very symbolic memorial to the fire and what has happened and how do we remember, but also to give birth to something new through this symbolic gesture. I think it's been a marvelous journey and project thus far.
I think it was fabulous. I mean, when I heard it, I think most people would absolutely dread a fire in their house. For those people who have gone through something like that, it is soul-destroying to think that often your personal memories, photos, documents, you know, pieces of furniture, things that are precious to people, often inherited, disappear in a fire and you're left, like you said, with the ashes. To think that you can repackage that and almost take the whatever's left and bring it to life in a new way and continue the story, maybe in a different way, but carry on that journey is absolutely fantastic. And I think it's a tremendous effort being made. Briefly, Ujala, what is the state of the library right now? Have you managed to rebuild? Is it back to its former glory, or is there still a little bit to be done?
Unfortunately not, Alexandra. We haven't been able to reconstruct the building at the moment. The reality is that the building was completely gutted. And it has been reinforced and sealed. It is a construction site. However, now that we are in a better position to actually engage with it at the moment, I think it was good that we did not rush into anything because, again, we've had several consultative processes to determine what is it that we want to utilize the space for. How do we want to incorporate new elements of engagement, dialogue, again, to be a space for creative expression, etc. And so with some time, we've been able to step back from the immediacy of our association with the fire and the destruction. And we now are able to very clearly state what it is we want to house in the building, how we would like to have it designed. So as an institution, we are going through now the necessary administrative processes, et cetera, finalizing the architectural brief and putting together a user group that will have oversight of the projects, et cetera. Having had some time lapse has given us this opportunity to think and reflect and to come through some ideation process to a realization of what it is we want to. So we are very definite that this library will continue being a library. It will become the home to the new African collection that we are committed to rebuilding. The archives we are wanting to separate from the library and have it in its own home. We want the new archives to be a living, working archive, not just a storehouse of documents and histories and testimonies, etc. It's got to be a living, working archive. So that's another project that's on the table as well. And then the third aspect of this particular project is to reconceptualize UCT libraries in its entirety as well, because the Jagger formed part of UCT libraries, and we're wanting to contemporize it. We're wanting to make it more meaningful and purposeful for the young African student, but also a place of scholarly works and a place for engagement, social engagement, etc. So there are three very dynamic prongs to this particular project, which is going to cost us a lot of money. But I think we are in the right space, that is the mental, the intellectual, and emotional space to take on this project at the moment. Yeah.
I think it's tremendous, and it's really a great story of continuity. That is Ujala Sadgur. She's the library's executive director there from the University of Cape Town, telling us a little bit more about this Ashes project, and I can't wait to see this book once it is out and available. It's the bottom of the hour, and you're listening to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8. We're going to take a quick musical break, and there's more of the hour right after this.
For more,
the Sandton Times Hour continues.
You're listening to the Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with Finally by Amorphos, Kelly Rowland, and CC Pennison. There's a bit of a Finally theme running through the show this week, interesting enough. Well, taking you into the second half of the Sandton Times Hour, my name is Alexander Leipner, and you know how all of this works if you listen regularly. And if you don't, let me fill you in. If there's anything that you heard on the show that sounded good, that sounded interesting, but you didn't get all the details, you can relax. All the information will be on the website under show notes. So if you visit santontimes.co.za today, click on the show notes for this week, and there'll be a detailed breakdown of everything you need to know, discussed, contact details as much as we have. And also be sure to check out the social media accounts at Sandton Times, and feel free to engage. You can send a tweet, a DM, a voice note, a whatever suits you, just do that. Also use the hashtag SantonTimesHour when needed. This past week, I joined the executives of a new life insurance brand called ULife for a bit of a luncheon and to find out a bit more about the launch of ULife into the South African market. Now, it's been founded in London in 2016, and they've achieved rapid traction in the UK insurance market. And they've got a flagship product, which is basically group life insurance. And they have this really engaging app that is part of the offer, and it offers rewards for completing daily tasks. And a lot of us know this. If you got any kind of sort of insurance, medical insurance, you know, there's a couple of these products out there. But this is for group life insurance, you know, the sort of usual funeral cover and all these things that are not really always the most sexiest of products. And they've done a very nice job by putting together this app. You get paid out in what they call U-coins, and users can then purchase an array of services and goods through the app, which is, I must say, very fun. It's very colorful, and it's a pretty easy experience. I sat down with the founder and CEO of ULife, Sammy Rubin, to tell me a bit more about how this all got started.
Well, it all goes back to my very first business when I was a young man just leaving university. My late father came up with an idea in the insurance market to trade insurance policies, and we started the business from our dining room table. And it quickly accelerated and grew, and we IPO'd. We floated the company on the London Stock Exchange. And I ran that business for about 8 years and got to understand life insurance. But at the same time, I got to a point where I experienced burnout, where I was burnt out physically, emotionally, mentally, and I decided to take a trip, a sabbatical for 6 months and go traveling and in a way reconnect to my own well-being. And I spent time in different wellness centers and I learned yoga, meditation, breath, changing my diet. Within a couple of months, I felt so much better. And I eventually ended up selling that business, but it became my passion to marry these two worlds of insurance and well-being. I was approached by Discovery to open up their life insurance company in the UK. It was called Pruprotect. It's now been rebranded as Vitality Life. So I became the founding CEO of that business. And we were the very first life insurance company to reward healthy behavior. Very much focused on individuals and very much focused on physical well-being. But my dream was to always build a tech-driven insurance company that would inspire people to live their best lives, not just physically, but also mentally, and to help businesses as well transform their culture into a culture of well-being. And that is really the fundamental values of ULife, and now why I'm so excited to bring ULife to South Africa.
I mean, when you talk about life insurance, it's not one of those products that people go running for and excited. It doesn't have the same glamour as a lot of other things that, you know, people purchase. It's probably one of those grudge purchases that people kind of either get into or have to do. How have you managed to reinvent or rethink that entire business in a new and fresh way?
Well, we always think that life insurers are in a very unique position. Because ultimately, a life insurance company wants to help their members live longer, healthier lives, because then they'll pay out less claims. And therefore, if a life insurer can help to incentivize healthy living, it's an absolute win-win. And that is really the whole fundamental basis of our business, that up till now, life insurers have just focused really on when people die and just claims compensation, just paying out when people die, people get sick. But our mission is to actually reimagine life insurance as a force for good, to breathe life into life insurance and to help inspire people every day to do something for their own well-being. And ultimately, that is a great win-win.
So if we get into the practical parts of it, I mean, it is essentially a life insurance solution for companies. So it's not sold to individuals, it's sold to organizations who have 5+ employees. And then they get an app. And in that app, there's a whole bunch of treasures that people can unlock. Just talk us through that.
So we've created a currency of well-being called UCoin. And our members can earn UCoin through doing very simple things, like going on a 5-minute walk or a 5-minute breathing meditation. We've made it very much simple and accessible to everyone. And as well as that, we've created a whole gamification so that people can go through different levels and open up different worlds and chests. And these challenges that people do can be very simple. As I said, a 5-minute walk, a 15-minute cycle, very, very simple challenges. And by doing that, they advance through the game, earning UCoin. And then they can exchange their UCoin, either for things like Amazon vouchers, Checkers vouchers, like vouchers for themselves, or something to do good in the world. So they can plant trees in exchange for their UCoin. They can donate meals for the hungry people through their UCoin. They can remove plastic from the ocean. And that's a great, again, win-win benefit, and it's a great ESG benefit for companies. So people are using this UCoin currency for doing a variety of things, and it becomes a motivator, as well as the gamification, for people engaging in our app and engaging in healthy habits every single day.
So you started this company a couple of years ago, pre-pandemic, when the world was a different place. And it started in the UK. I mean, you've had some great successes in the UK so far. I mean, it's grown substantially enough for you to now expand into the US and into South Africa. And you've got a giraffe as your icon. Now, quite odd for a UK-based company to have a giraffe as your icon. Why is that?
Well, the giraffe has the largest heart of any land animal. And we are coming from a place of love. We have a very big heart. And in a way, I'm so excited we're launching in South Africa because Yugi, who's the name of our giraffe, is genuinely coming home. So I'm really excited to bring the giraffe back home to where it belongs and to be launching ULife in Africa.
Amazing. Now, you've also got a very interesting way that you structure your business because you kind of have everyone working from different countries. You've got a team spread across the world. And working from home or having a home office is actually more of a planned business structure rather than something that became as a result of COVID. How do you keep this strong company culture alive as the founder across so many territories in a place where people don't go to an office, where a lot of people are saying, oh, we need to get people back to the office. They need to, you know, drink the coffee, breathe the air, and see other people.
You're so right. And we have now around 260 people working in 14 countries. And we work very hard at creating a cohesive culture. So, for example, every Monday morning, I will talk through Zoom to our whole team for 15 minutes. We kick off the Monday morning, just reminding everyone of the big purpose of our business and reminding them of the company values. Then on Thursday, my co-founder will run an all-hands presentation where we'll give shout-outs to each other and people will present on the business and people will introduce themselves. And we do that every Thursday afternoon. And in addition, every quarter, we have a physical meetup where everyone around the world will come together for a conference, a festival, a learning event, so that we combine people working remotely in their safety of their homes, together with in-house, together with company events where everyone is meeting together physically. And we feel that combination, that hybrid way of working, is ideal for a really productive and happy environment.
It's fascinating. Now, obviously, the big plan right now is to get South Africa off the ground, to get the ball rolling in South Africa, and probably a lot of companies, people listening to this, will be working for big organizations, will probably start hearing about New Life in the coming weeks. But where to from here? Where to for 2023?
Well, we're so excited to be coming into this new market in South Africa. We're launching now life insurance for businesses, a funeral cover, disability. These are the standard products that we're offering now for companies of over 5 employees, together with all well-being tools and all this rich engagement and rewards. And we really have big ambitions for South Africa, for expanding our product range over time, really to penetrate to more and more workforces, both large and small, and ultimately to make a difference to millions of people's lives, to inspire people to live their best lives.
There you have it, founder and CEO of Ulife, Sammy Rubin, joining me there in Sandton during that luncheon. And I hope you found that as interesting as I did.
The latest news.
The biggest names.
The best destinations.
The hottest entertainment. This is the Sandton Times Hour.
It is the Sandton Times Hour, and as always at this time of the hour, we do a quick change of pace as we get into... Well, a show that I've actually seen twice. I saw it in the 90s, when it, I think it first came out to South Africa. And then I saw it again in the 2010s. And it's back again in Johannesburg. It's called Buddy. It's the Buddy Holly story. It's a fantastic musical. And somehow it never seems to date. It's a show that you can watch over and over again. And the music of Buddy Holly just lives on. And joining me on the line is the new Buddy Holly for this edition of the Buddy Holly Show. It's Jethro Tait, and it's good to have you on the Sandton Times Hour.
Hey, yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So Jethro, what's it like having to play an unbelievably iconic rock and roll star like Buddy Holly, who's what, back in the 50s was one of the biggest names?
Yes, yeah, back in the late 50s, he was quite successful. It's a huge role to take on. There are some big shoes to fill. Especially when people like you are watching, who have seen the show twice before and seen two other people play Buddy Holly. So yeah, I mean, he was a really big artist in the late 50s, died at the age of 22, pretty tragically, but he accomplished so much in such a short career. And yeah, it's one of those shows that's just so much fun. I've had so much fun doing it. We've just finished the Cape Town leg of the show, and now we're about to start in Johannesburg. And yeah, I'm having the time of my life. It's been so much fun. The audiences have been amazing. It's been really well received. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this run in Johannesburg.
Well, it's a great show. I mean, like you say, I'm no surprise that the audiences love it because it is the kind of show that has unbelievable upbeat music. I mean, by the end of the show, you're probably out of your chairs, you know, just asking for more and more encores because it is just such a catchy array of music that Buddy Holly turned out in his short period on stage. How did you get ready for a role like this? Because I mean, Buddy Holly has got some very sort of unique characteristics. If I think about also his twang, the way he sings, the way he performs. I mean, there's a lot that you have to do as somebody on stage to really pull off Buddy Holly.
Yeah, I think the first place I started was with the guitar playing. A lot of his songs, the chords are quite simple, but it's the way he played it. He played a lot of downstrokes. There were a lot of like interesting little riffs in between the chords. So yeah, that was where I started. I just kind of dived into the music and learned how to play everything before kind of focusing on anything else. And then with the voice, I mean, obviously, yeah, I've tried to get it as similar to his as I can. Obviously, my voice is very different, but there are some things that he did that I've kind of replicated, just to kind of give it that vibe and that sense of the late 50s when rock and roll was first starting, and he was obviously a big pioneer in that. So there are some characteristics that I've kind of picked up and added to my voice. Then with like the whole performance aspect, that was quite difficult because there's not a lot of footage of him. So I think there are only like a handful of videos of him actually performing these songs. That I've had to kind of pick up some of the things that he did, but also just add my own, because like in the 50s, things were quite stiff. There wasn't that much movement, and that's going to be quite boring for people to watch in this day and age. So I have added like some characteristics that I think if he had carried on playing, and if it was a little bit more in the future, a lot more video, a lot more performance, I think he would have maybe had a bit more of that kind of physicality. So yeah, I've spent a lot of time like and researched as much as I can and kind of put together a version of Buddy that I think, or I hope, people will like.
Well, I'm certainly keen to see what you do with it. What do you think makes this musical stand the test of time? I mean, it's been going for such a long time. I mean, Buddy Holly, as you say, has been dead for such a long time. And yet here we are in 2023, still listening to his music and still seeing versions of this musical being performed all over the world.
Yeah, I think one of the main things is definitely the music. It's such great music, and it's music that has, like you said, stood the test of time. You don't realize that you know some of these songs, or people to watch the show like who don't really know Buddy Holly, once they hear the song, they're like, oh, I know that. They've got great pop sensibility. They're very catchy. One of the main things as well is also just the story, like how tragically he died and at such a young age in that plane crash. And I think it captures your imagination to kind of think of what else would he have achieved. He obviously influenced music so much at such a young age, and in the space of about 18 months, I think, or 2 years. So I think that kind of captures people's imagination of like, what more would he have done? How else would he have influenced music and pop culture? So yeah, it's a very interesting story. It's a tragic story, but I think it definitely still captures people's imagination.
Yeah. What's your favorite part of the show? I mean, it is quite a long show. It's about sort of 2.5 hours, but it's amazing how it doesn't feel like 2.5 hours, because I know there's also some other elements there. There's the big bopper with Chantilly Lace, and then also a great rendition of La Bamba. But what's your sort of best part of the show? Is there a particular part that you always look forward to?
I think my favorite parts are definitely like the concerts. So we do two of his concerts in the show. So we do his performance at Apollo, where he was the first white artist to perform at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. And that's such a fun concert. Obviously, in the beginning, he's quite nervous. He doesn't know how he's going to be received in that audience. But he is received really well. And it's just so much fun, like kind of going through the stages of that performance. And then obviously at the end, we put on the Clear Lake concert, which was his last ever show. He actually died that night in the plane crash after that show with the Big Bopper and Richie Valens. So that is also just such a fun concert because it does, like you said, feature the Big Bopper and Richie Valens as well. So I think those are probably my favorite moments. I obviously have music background. I'm a singer-songwriter in my day-to-day life, so I think that kind of was the part that came most naturally to me, because I'm used to kind of performing in that environment. So those are definitely my favorite moments.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, if you're listening right now and you want to go see Buddy, the Buddy Holly story, it's going to be on at the Teatro at Monte Cassino. It's on from the 22nd of April and runs until the 28th of May 2023. And you can get your tickets at Web Tickets. And if you haven't seen the show, let me encourage you to go see it. It is actually just one of those really great upbeat shows. The story is well put together. It's one of those timeless stories that you never really get tired of. And if you have seen it before, well, like myself, you might want to go along and actually see how this version of Buddy Holly comes together. Jethro Tate, he is playing Buddy in Buddy Holly. And Jethro, I thank you for making the time to be on the Santon Times Hour.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
It's fantastic. Well, we're going to take a quick break, a bit of music, and we'll be right back after this.
It's a good question because lots of people have asked us that, you know, what are you going to do going forward?
That's a great question.
Two critically important questions.
Such a great and interesting question.
I have not even thought about that until you've just said it.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour.
That's right, it's the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with one final, finally, this time by Tapsy, which takes us into the last 100 meters of this week's hour. And as we kind of get things wrapped up and do one last bit, one thing that we haven't touched on in quite some time is cryptocurrency. What's happened to cryptocurrency? Where are we at? And I don't know if it's because the markets aren't flying through the roof, or what are the markets doing? We actually don't know. Let's get someone on who actually does know what's going on, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Hannes Wessels. He's the new country head of Binance in South Africa, and if you haven't heard of Binance, they're a global cryptocurrency exchange, and you can basically trade various cryptocurrency currencies on this platform, and they're the largest cryptocurrency exchange in the world in terms of trading volume as of 2021, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Hannes. And Hannes, maybe before we kick off, how are you adapting and adopting this new role?
No, hi there, Alex, and good afternoon to all the listeners. No, it's been a great run. It's now just over 9 months, and yeah, you know, when I joined, no one knew about FTX, no one knew about all the action in the US, no one knew about everything that would come across our past. But you know, what doesn't break us make us stronger. And I think, you know, especially the FTX moment, if I can call it that, was certainly transformative, I think, for the whole industry. You know, there's in engineering terms, there's something called the Lindy effect, which is basically a test of your resilience, not only for people, but for platforms, for firms, for anything basically constructed by humans. And this was certainly one of those tests. And I think cryptocurrency definitely came stronger out of it. I think we as a firm, Binance, we came out through it stronger. And then if you look at, you know, basically our index price, you want to call it that, the Bitcoin price, I think the lowest it went was just in the 16,000s. But it just shows you that, yeah, we have resilient systems. They certainly continue to perform.
Yeah. I mean, you come from a traditional banking background. I mean, you're ex-HSBC corporate investment banking head. Many of your colleagues might say this is sort of a crossover to the dark side. You know, the traditional banking is a bit concerned or worried about cryptocurrency. They can't quite put their finger on it.
Well, you know, the economist Davy Root explains it very well. He says you get public money and you get private money. And, you know, the world continuously evolves. And I think there's a lot of space for both. I think South Africa, as a firm, we always contrast various countries in Africa on each other. And Nigeria is a very special case when it comes to crypto. But we sometimes forget that South Africa's got a very sophisticated traditional finance system, and that's a good thing. But there's also a lot of people who are still unbanked and don't have access to the financial system, you know. So there's a lot of untapped markets still out there. I mean, Capitec published their results. They had a very good run. But you can also see that the average consumer out there struggles, and a lot of them struggle because they don't have access to financial systems, financial platforms. And I think crypto can bridge that gap.
Yeah. Well, let's have a look at crypto itself. I mean, as I say, there hasn't... I don't know if there hasn't been much fireworks of late. I know there are those odd runs that we had over the last couple of years and months where people were literally mortgaging their house and selling off their car and their furniture and whatever else they could find to get on the bandwagon. We haven't seen that in a long time. And I think the war in the Ukraine, initially, there were some thoughts that people would possibly go to crypto as opposed to gold to try and preserve value. Where are we at? What's the temperature like in the crypto world right now? Are we just sort of cruising along and kind of waiting for the next big wave?
If you say the next big wave, it's always crypto is still dominated by the Bitcoin cycles, or crypto is still dominated by Bitcoin. Bitcoin is still between 50 and 60% in the market, depends when you look at it. And Bitcoin has got very defined four-year cycles. And we now almost midway in that four-year cycle. And that's what I'm saying. You can clearly see if you look at some of the market analysis, the Bitcoin price beginning to pick up again, not financial advice. And if I hear, you know, I cringe when I hear about people mortgaging their house, that's definitely something you shouldn't do. And there I'm prepared to give you financial advice. Don't do that. I do think personally, you should allocate a small part of your disposable income to crypto. But also I think where the crypto markets are, I think it's important for me that we should use this, start using as a payment mechanism. It was initially designed, if you look at the Bitcoin white paper, it was initially conceived and designed as a peer-to-peer payment mechanism that's not reliant on the dollar clearing system in New York, that's not reliant on a stock exchange settlement system, that's not reliant on a centralized platform to clear. So this is a decentralized platform, and initially there was a lot of doubt and skepticism about it, but it's now in its, I think, in our 14th year with Bitcoin, you know. So it's proven time and time again that this works, and it works on a decentralized basis. And that for me is the big benefit of it. And hopefully we can adopt that type of technology more and more in other platforms.
So as you mentioned, Bitcoin is the dominant or the most well-known of the cryptocurrencies. Then there's Ethereum, and then there's been a couple of other ones that have appeared in the top 10. Any complete newcomers to the entire portfolio that are making some headway and are looking promising?
I must be honest, I generally just watch the top 10, top 15. I can't say that there's any particular newcomers that I think has just come from nowhere. I look at, you know, our own native coin in Binance, the BNB chain coin. That is now the number three, as I think it should be. There's a couple of other exciting ones like Avalanche, like Solana. A lot of people talk about Solana. They've had their share of troubles. That's one I'm watching with keen interest, as I think it's got a lot of upside. If you look at how that blockchain performs vis-a-vis Bitcoin and even Ethereum, it's very fast and very reliable. So over and above the BNB coin, that's one I've got my eye on, and I think it's going to go a long way in future.
Well, it sounds very interesting, and I think you and I are probably going to have quite a few more conversations on this over the next couple of months as we watch what happens with cryptocurrency. I mean, like, you could wake up one day and suddenly there's all kinds of action going on. I mean, as I say, I've been watching it over the last couple of weeks and months, and it's been fairly sort of up and down, nothing major, no major moves, but it's that volatility that obviously, on the one hand, makes it quite exciting, and on the other hand, heart-stopping at the best of times. So, Hannes, I look forward to having those conversations with you. Hannes Wessels, he is the country head for Binance in South Africa, and I thank you for making the time to be on the Santon Times Hour.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it, and I want to take you up on that. We should do a couple more of these.
And that's it for another Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and is always available as a podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. If you want to get in touch, you can email us on editor@santontimes.co.za or connect on social media @SantonTimes. And visit the website, www.santontimes.co.za, and connect with your thoughts, your questions, your comments, your feedback, your input. Any interesting stories, happy to hear about them. Thank you to all our guests who made time to be on the show this week. And once again, Vincenzo, you know what? I can always rely on you making it all happen and making us sound good. Thank you to the team at the Santon Times, as well as everyone at Mix 93.8. And thank you for listening. And let's connect again next week.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to the Santon Times Hour. And if you enjoyed it, be sure to share it.